Welcome to Henry IV, Part 2. Hotspur is dead. Part of the rebellion has been put down. Henry IV, the usurper, has a sure hand on the crown, but there are still a lot of malcontents running around. Plus, he's got this problem son who keeps hanging out with this fat braggart who, in part one, is shown to be quite witty and festive and also kind of a jerk. So, this part takes up, and in this we will find out how Prince Hal grows into Henry V. And anybody who's got dad issues will really like the last part of this play. Particularly if you're a guy with dad issues. So, all right, we're not, because there are so many parts and not that many of us, we're going to do a sit-down reading, although some of us may occasionally stand up to read, so don't get upset.
Yeah, we're not going to come up there and make you sing.
Right.
This is not open to people.
Or are we?
We might roar, but the ladies should not panic.
Soy un cruel león.
We're not purging emotions tonight, so you don't have to worry about spontaneous fits of hysteria.
Feel like a group catharsis.
Yeah.
So try and guess which character we're playing each time we speak.
Yes.
Be part of the fun.
I can laugh at the
All right. We all set?
Yeah. What news, Lord Barnall? Every minute now should be the father of some strategy. The times are wild. Contention, like a horse full of high feeding, madly hath broke loose and bears down all before him.
Noble Earl, I bring you certain news from Shrewsbury.
Good, and God will.
As good as heart can wish. The king is almost wounded to the death, and in the fortune of my lord, your son, Prince Harry slain outright, and both the Blunts killed by the hand of Douglas. Young Prince John and Westmoreland and Stafford fled the field, and Harry Monmouth's brawn, the hulk Sir John, is prisoner to your son. Oh, such a day, so fought, so followed, and so fairly won, came not till now, dignified the time since Caesar's fortunes.
How is this derived? Saw you the field? Came you from Shrewsbury?
I spake with one, my lord, that came from thence, a gentleman well-bred and of good name, that freely rendered me these news for true.
Here comes my servant Travers, whom I sent on Tuesday last to listen after news.
My lord, I overrode him on the way, and he is furnished with no certainties more than he happily may retail from me.
Now, Travers, what good tidings comes with you?
My lord, Sir John Umfraville turned me back with joyful tidings, and being better horsed, outrode me. After him came spurring hard a gentleman, almost forspent with speed, that stopped by me to breathe his bloody horse. He asked the way to Chester, and of him I did demand what news from Shrewsbury. He told me that rebellion had bad luck, and that young Harry Percy's spur was cold. With that, he gave his able horse the head, and bending forward, struck his armed heels against the panting sides of his poor jade up to the rowelhead, and starting so, he seemed in running to devour the way, staying no longer question.
Again, said he young Harry Percy's spur was cold? Of Hotspur, Coldspur, that rebellion had met ill luck?
My lord, I'll tell you what. If my young lord, your son, have not the day, upon mine honor for a silken point, I'll give my barony. Never talk about it.
Why should that gentleman that rode by Travers give then such instances of loss?
Who, he? He was some hilding fellow that had stolen the horse he rode on, and upon my life spoke at a venture. Ah, look, here comes more news.
Yea, this man's brow, like to a tidal leaf, foretells the nature of a tragic volume. So looks the strand whereon the imperious flood hath left a witness usurpation. Say, Morton, didst thou come from Shrewsbury?
I ran from Shrewsbury, my noble lord.
There you are.
Where hateful death put on his ugliest mask to fright our party.
How doth my son and brother? Thou tremblest, and the whiteness in thy cheek is apter than thy tongue to tell thy errand. Even such a man, so faint, so spiritless, so dull, so dead in look, so woe-begone, drew Priam's curtain in the dead of night. and would have told him half his Troy was burnt. But Priam found the fire ere he his tongue, and I my Percy's death ere thou reportest it. This thou wouldst say, your son did thus and thus, your brother thus. So fought the noble Douglas, stopping my greedy ear with their bold deeds, but in the end to stop my ear indeed. Thou hast a sigh to blow away this praise, ending with brother, son, and all are dead.
Douglas is living, and your brother yet, but for my lord your son.
Why, he is dead. See what a ready tongue suspicion hath. He that but fears the thing he would not know hath by instinct knowledge from others' eyes that what he feared is chanced. Yet speak, Morton. Tell thou an earl his divination lies, and I will take it as a sweet disgrace and make thee rich for doing me such wrong.
You're too great by me to by me gainsaid. Your spirit is too true, your fears too certain.
Yet for all this, say not that Percy's dead. I see a strange confession in thine eye. Thou shakest thy head, and holdest it fear or sin to speak a truth. If he be slain, say so. The tongue offends not that reports his death, and he doth sin that doth belie the dead. Not he which says the dead is not alive. Yet the first bringer of unwelcome news hath but a losing office, and his tongue sounds ever after as a sullen bell remembered tolling a departing friend.
I cannot think, my lord, your son is dead.
I am sorry. I should force you to believe that which I would to God I have not seen. For these mine eyes saw him in bloody state, rendering faith quickness, wearied and outbreath to Harry Monmouth, whose swift wrath beat down the never daunted Percy to the earth, from whence with life he nevermore sprang up. In fear his death, whose spirit lit the fire, even to the dullest peasant in his camp, being brooded once took fire and heat away from the best tempered courage in his troops. For from his metal was his party steeled, which once in him abated all the rest, turned on themselves like dull and heavy lead. And as the thing that's heavy in itself, upon enforcement flies with greatest speed, so did our men, heavy in Hotspur's loss, lend to this weight such lightness for their fear that arrows fled not swifter toward their aim than did our soldiers, aiming at their safety, fly from the field. Then was the noble Worcester too soon taken prisoner, and that furious Scot, the bloody Douglas, whose well-laboring sword had three times slain the appearance of the king, can veil his stomach and did grace the shame of those that turned their backs, and in his life, stumbling in fear, was took. The sum of all is that the king hath won and hath sent out a speedy power to encounter you, my lord, under the conduct of young Lancaster and Westmoreland. This is the news at full.
For this I shall have time enough to mourn. Thou art a guard too wanton for the head, which princes fleshed with conquest aim to hit. Now bind my brows with iron, and approach the raggedest hour that time and spite dare bring, to frown upon the enraged Northumberland.
This strained passion doth you wrong, my lord.
Sweet earl, divorce not wisdom from your honor. We all that are engaged to this loss knew that we ventured on such dangerous seas that if we brought our life, 'twas 10 to 1. And yet we ventured, for the game proposed choked the respect of lightly perilled fear. And since we are o'erset, venture again. Come, we will all put forth, body and goods.
'Tis more than time, and my most noble lord, I hear for certain, and do speak the truth. The gentle Archbishop of York is up with well-appointed powers. He is a man who with a double surety binds his followers. My lord, your son had only but the corpse, but shadows and the shows of men to fight. For that same word, rebellion, did divide the action of their bodies from their souls. And they did fight with queasiness, constrained as men drink potions, that their weapons only seemed on our side, but for their spirits and souls. This word, rebellion, that it froze them up as fish are in a pond. But now the bishop turns insurrection to religion. Supposed sincere and holy in his thoughts, he's followed both with body and with mind, and doth enlarge his rising with the blood of fair King Richard, scraped from comfort stones, drives from heaven his quarrel and his cause, tells them he doth bestride a bleeding land, gasping for life under great Bolingbroke, and more and less do flock to follow him.
I knew of this before, but to speak truth, this
present grief hath wiped it from my mind. Go in with me, and counsel every man the aptest way for safety and revenge. Get posts and letters, and make friends with speed, never so few, and never yet more need.
Scene 2, London, a street. Enter Falstaff, with his page bearing his sword and buckler.
Sirrah, you giant! What says the doctor to my water?
He said, sir, the water itself was a good healthy water, but for the party that owned it, he might have more diseases than he knew for.
Oh, men of all sorts take a pride to gird at me. The brain of this foolish compounded clay, man, is not able to invent anything that tends to laughter more than I invent or is invented on me. I am not only witty in myself, but the cause that wit is in other men. I do here walk before thee like a sow that hath overwhelmed all her litter but one. If the prince put thee into my service for any other reason than to set me off, why then have I no judgment? What said Master Dumbledon about the satin from my short cloak and my slops?
He said, sir, you should procure him better assurance than Bardolph. He would not take his band and yours. He liked not the security.
Let him be damned like the glutton. Pray God his tongue be hotter. A horse, son, at a Puckfell. A rascally, yea, forsooth, knave, to bear a gentleman in hand and then stand upon security. The horse on smooth pates do now wear nothing but high shoes and bunches of keys at their girdles. If a man is through with them in honest taking up, then they must stand upon security. I had as lief they would put rat's bane in my mouth as offer to stop it with security. Where's Bardolph?
He's gone into Smithfield to buy your worship a new horse.
I bought him in Paul's, and he'll buy me a horse in Smithfield, and I could get me a wife in the stews. I were man, horse, and wife.
Sir, here comes the nobleman that committed the prince for striking him about Bardolph.
Wait close, I will not see him.
What's he that goes here?
Falstaff, and please, your lordship.
He that was in question for the robbery?
He, my lord, but he hath since done good service at Shrewsbury, and, as I hear, is now going with some charge to the Lord John of Lancaster.
What, to York? Call him back again.
Sir John Falstaff!
Boy, tell him I am deaf!
You must speak louder. My master is deaf.
Sir John Falstaff, a word with you.
Oh, my good lord, God give your lordship good time of day. I am glad to see your lordship abroad. I heard say your lordship was sick. I hope your lordship goes abroad by advice. Your lordship, though not clean past your youth, hath yet some smack of age in you, some relish of the saltiness of time, and I must humbly beseech your lordship to have a reverent care of your health.
Sir John, I sent for you before your expedition to Shrewsbury.
And please, your lordship, I hear his majesty is returned with some discomfort from Wales.
I talk not of his majesty. You would not come when I sent for you.
And I hear, moreover, his highness has fallen into this same whoreson apoplexy.
Well, God mend him. I pray you, let me speak with you.
This apoplexy is, as I take it, a kind of lethargy. And please, your lordship, a kind of sleeping in the blood, a whoreson tingling.
What tell you me of it? Be it as it is.
It hath its original from much grief, from study and perturbation of the brain. I have read the cause of his effects in Galen. It is a kind of deafness.
I think you are fallen into the disease, for you hear not what I say to you.
Very well, my lord, very well. Rather, and please you, it is the disease of not listening, the malady of not marking that I am troubled withal.
To punish you by the heels would amend the attention of your ears, and I care not if I do become your physician.
Oh, I am as poor as Job, my lord, but not so patient. Your lordship may minister the potion of imprisonment to me in respect of poverty, but how should I be your patient to follow your prescriptions? The wise may make some drab of a scruple, or indeed a scruple itself.
I sent for you. When there were matters against you for your life to come, speak with me.
as I was when advised by my learned counsel in the laws of this land service, I did not come.
Well, the truth is, Sir John, you live in great infamy.
He that buckles him in my belt cannot live in lust.
Your means are very slender, and your waist is great.
I would it were otherwise. I would my means were greater, and my waist slenderer.
You have misled the youthful prince.
The young prince hath misled me. I am the fellow with the great belly, and he my dog.
Well, I am not to call a new heel's wound. Your day's service at Shrewsbury hath a little gilded over your night's exploit on Gad's Hill. You may thank the unquiet time for your quiet or posting that action.
My lord.
But since all is well, keep it so. Wake not a sleeping wolf.
To wake a wolf is as bad as to smell a fox.
What? You are as a candle, the better part burned out.
a wassail candle, my lord, all tallow. If I did say of wax, my growth would prove the truth.
There is not a white hair on your face, but should have his effect of gravity.
His effect of gravy. Gravy.
Gravy.
You follow the young prince up and down like his ill angel.
Not so, my lord. Your ill angel is light, but I hope he that looks upon me will take me without weighing. And yet, in some respects, I grant, I cannot go. I cannot tell. Virtue is of so little regard in these costermonger times that true valor is turned bear herd. Pregnancy is made a tapster, and hath his quick wit wasted in giving reckonings. All the other gifts, appertinent to man, as the malice of this age shapes them, are not worth a gooseberry. You that are old, consider not the capacities of us that are young. You do measure the heat of our livers with the bitterness of your galls. And we that are in the wayward of our youth, I must confess, are wags too.
Do you set down your name in the scroll of youth that are written down old with all the characters of age? Have you not a moist eye, a dry hand, a yellow cheek, a white beard, a decreasing leg, an increasing belly? Is not your voice broken, your wind short, your chin double, your wit single, and every part about you blasted with antiquity? And will you yet call yourself young? Fie, 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 Sir John!
My lord, I was born about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, with a white head and something around belly. For my voice, I have lost it with howling and singing of anthems. To approve my youth further, I will not. The truth is, I am only old in judgment and understanding, and he that will caper with me for 1,000 marks, let him lend me the money and have at it. For the box of the ear that the prince gave you, he gave it like a rude prince, and you took it like a sensible lord. I have checked him for it, and the young lion repents. Marry not in ashes and sackcloth, but in new silk.
Well, God send the prince a better companion.
God send the companion a better prince. I cannot rid my hands of him.
Well, the king hath severed you and Prince Harry. I hear you are going with Lord John of Lancaster against the Archbishop and the Earl of Northumberland.
Yea, I thank your pretty sweet wit for it. But look you, pray, all you that kiss my lady peace at home, that our armies join not in a hot day. For by the Lord, I take but 2 shirts out with me, and I mean not to sweat extraordinarily. If it be a hot day and I brandish anything but a bottle, I would I might never spit white again. There is not a dangerous action can peep out his head, but I am thrust upon it. Well, I cannot last ever. But it was always yet the trick of our English nation, if they have a good thing, to make it too common. If ye will needs say I am an old man, you should give me rest. I would to God my name were not so terrible to the enemy as it is. I were better to be eaten to death with the rust than to be scoured to nothing with perpetual motion.
Well, be honest, be honest, and God bless your expedition.
Will your lordship lend me 1,000 pounds to furnish me for it?
Not a penny. Not a penny. You are too impatient to bear crosses. Fare you well. Commend me to my cousin Westmoreland.
Go bear this letter to my lord of Lancaster, this to the prince, this to the Earl of Westmoreland, and this to old Mistress Ursula, whom I have weakly sworn to marry since I perceived the first white hair on my chin. About it, you know where to find me. Oh, pox on this gout, or a gout of this pox. For the one of, or the other plays the rogue with my great toe. 'Tis no matter if I do halt. I have the wards for my color, and my pension shall seem the more reasonable. A good wit will make use of anything. I will turn diseases to commodity. Scene 3, York, the Archbishop's Palace, and to the Archbishop of York, the Lords Hastings, Mowbray, and Barnard.
Thus have you heard our cause and known our means. And, my most noble friends, I pray you all, speak plainly your opinions of our hopes. And first, Lord Marshal, what say you to it?
I well allow the occasion of our arms, but gladly would be better satisfied how in our means we should advance ourselves to look with forehead, bold and big enough, upon the power and puissance of the king.
Our present musters grow upon the file to 25,000 men of choice, and our supplies live largely in the hope of Great Northumberland, whose bosom burns with an incensed fire of injury.
The question then, Lord Hastings, standeth thus, whether our present 25,000 may hold up head without Northumberland.
With him we may.
Yea, marry, there's the point. But if without him we be thought too feeble, my judgment is we should not step too far till we had his assistance by the hand. For in a theme so bloody-faced as this, conjecture, expectation, and surmise of aids uncertain should not be admitted.
'Tis very true, Lord Bardolph, for indeed it was young Hotspur's case. At Shrewsbury.
It was, my lord, who, lying himself with hope, eating the air on promise of supply, flattering himself in project of a power much smaller than the smallest of his thoughts, and so with great imagination, proper to madmen, led his powers to death, and winking left it to destruction.
Grant that our hopes, yet likely a fair birth, should be still born, and that we now possess the outmost man of expectation. I think we are a body strong enough, even as we are to equal with the king.
What, is the king but 25,000?
To us no more. Nay, not so much Lord Bardolph, for his divisions, as the times he brawl, are in 3 heads. One power against the French, one against Glendower, perforce a third must take up us. And so is the unfirm king in 3 divided, and his coffers sound with hollow poverty and emptiness.
That he should draw his several strengths together and come against us in full puissance need not be dreaded.
If he should do so, he leaves his back unarmed, the French and Welsh baying him at the heels. Never fear that.
Who is it like should lead his forces hither?
The Duke of Lancaster and Westmoreland, against the Welsh himself and the Harry Monmouth. But who is substituted against the French, I have no certain notice.
Let us on and publish the occasion of our arms. The Commonwealth is sick of their own choice. Their over-greedy love hath surfeited. An habitation giddy and unsure hath he that buildeth on the vulgar heart. Oh, thou fond many, with what loud applause didst thou beat heaven with blessing Bolingbroke, for he was what thou wouldst have him be.
Shall we go draw our numbers and set on?
We are time subjects, and time bids be gone.
Act 2, Scene 1, London, a street. Enter Mistress Quickly, Fang, and his boy with her, and Snare following.
Master Fang, have you entered the action?
It is entered.
Where is your yeoman? Is it a lusty yeoman? Will it stand to it?
Sirrah, where's Snare?
Oh, look, oh Lord, I, good Master Snare!
Here, here!
Snare, we must arrest Sir John Falstaff.
Yea, good Master Snare, I have entered him and all.
It may chance cost some of us our lives, for he will stab.
Alas, the day! Take heed of him. He stabbed me in my own house, and that most beastly, in good faith, he cares not what mischief he does. If his weapon be out, he will foin like any devil. He will spare neither man, woman, nor child.
If I can close with him, I care not for his thrust.
No, bride, I will be at your elbow.
And I but fist him once, and it come within my vice.
I am undone by his going. I warrant you, he's an infinitive thing about my score. 100 more is a long one for a poor, lone woman to bear. And I have borne and borne and borne, and have been thumped off and thumped off and thumped off from this day to that day, that it is a shame to be thought of. There is no honesty in such dealing. unless a woman should be made an ass and a beast to bear her name's wrong. Yonder he comes, and that errant Malmsey-nosed knave Bardolph with him. Do your offices, Master Fang and Master Snare. Do me your offices.
How now? Whose mare is dead? What's the matter?
Sir John, I arrest you in the suit of Mistress Quickly.
Away, varlet. Draw, Bardolph. Cut me off the villain's head. Throw the queen in the channel.
Throw me in the channel, I'll throw thee in the channel. Wilt thou, thou bastardly rogue? Murder, all thou honeysuckle villain. Wilt thou kill God's officers and the king's? Oh, thou honeyseed rogue, thou art a honeyseed, a man dweller, and a woman dweller.
Keep them off, Bardolph.
A rescue!
Good people, bring a rescuer to! Thou hemp seed!
Away, you scullion, you rampallion, you fustellarian! I'll tickle your catastrophe.
What is the matter? Keep the peace here, oh.
Good, my lord, be good to me, I beseech you, stand to me.
How now, Sir John? What are you brawling here? Does this become your place, your time, and business? You should have been well on your way to York. Stand from him, fellow. Wherefore hangs upon him?
Oh, most worshipful lord, and it please your grace, I am a poor widow of Eastcheap, and he is arrested at my suit.
For what sum?
It is more than for some, my lord. It is for all that I have. He hath eaten me out of house and home. He hath put all my substance into that fat belly of his. But I will have some of it out again, or I will ride 3 nights like the mare.
I think I am as like to ride the mare if I have any vantage of ground to get up.
How comes this, Sir John? Fie! What man of good temper would endure this tempest of exclamation? Are you not ashamed to enforce a poor widow to so rough a course to come by her own?
What is the gross sum that I owe thee?
Marry, if thou wert an honest man, thyself and the money too. Thou didst swear to me upon a parcel gilt goblet, sitting in my dolphin chamber at the round table by a sea coal fire, upon Wednesday and Weason week, when the king broke thy head for likening his father to a singing man of Windsor. Thou didst swear to me then, as I was washing thy wounds, to marry me and make me, my lady, thy wife. Canst thou deny it? And didst thou not kiss me and bid me fetch thee 30 shillings? I put thee now to thy book oath. Deny it if thou canst.
My lord, this is a poor mad soul. And she says up and down the town that the eldest son is like you. She hath been in good case, and the truth is, poverty has distracted her. But for these foolish officers, I beseech you, I may have redress against them.
Sir John, I am well acquainted with your manner of wrenching the true cause the false way. It is not a confident brow, nor the throng of words that come with such more than impudent sauciness from you, can thrust me from a level consideration. You have, as it appears to me, practiced upon the easy yielding spirit of this woman, and made her serve your uses both in purse and in person.
Yea, in truth, my lord.
Pray thee peace. Pay her the debt you owe her, and unpay the villainy you have done her. The one you may do with sterling money, and the other with current repentance.
My lord, I will not undergo this sneak without reply. You call honorable boldness impudent sauciness. The man will make courtesy and say nothing. He is virtuous. No, my lord, my humble duty remembered, I will not be your suitor. I say to you, I do desire deliverance from these officers, being upon hasty employment in the king's affairs.
You speak as having power to do wrong, but answer in the effect of your reputation, and satisfy this poor woman.
Oh, come hither, hostess.
Now, Master Gower, what news?
The king, my lord, and Harry Prince of Wales are near at hand. The rest of the paper tells.
As I am a gentleman.
Faith, you said so before.
As I am a gentleman, come, no more words of it.
By this heavenly ground I tread on, I must be feigned upon both my plate and the tapestry of my dining chambers.
Let it alone. I'll make other shifts. You'll be a fool still.
Well, you shall have it when I pawn my gown. I hope you'll come to supper. You'll pay me altogether.
Will I live? Go with her. With her, hook on, hook on.
Will you have Doll's hair sheet to meet you at supper?
No more words. Let's have her.
I have heard better word, better news.
What's the news, my lord? Where lay the king?
Where lay the king last night?
At Basingstoke, my lord.
I hope, my lord, all's well. What is the news, my lord?
Comes all his forces back?
No. 1,500 foot, 500 horses are marched up to my lord of Lancaster against Northumberland and the archbishop.
Comes the king back from Wales, my noble lord?
You shall have letters of me presently. Come, go on with me, good Master Gower.
My lord!
What's the matter?
Master Gower, shall I entreat you with me to dinner?
I must wait upon my good lord here. I thank you, good Sir John.
Sir John, you loiter here too long, being you are to take soldiers up in counties as you go.
Will you sup with me, Master Gower?
What foolish master taught you these manners, Sir John?
Master Gower, they become me not. He was a fool that taught them me. This is the right fencing grace, my lord. Tap for tap, and so fair part fair.
Now the light lightened thee. Thou art a great fool.
Scene 2, London, another street. Enter Prince Henry and Poins.
Before God, I am exceedingly wary.
Yes, come to that. I had thought weariness durst not have attached one of so high blood.
Faith. It does me. Though it discolors the complexion of my greatness to acknowledge it, doth it not show vilely in me to desire small beer?
Why, a prince could not be so loosely studied as to remember so weak a composition.
Belike, then, my appetite was not princely got, for, by my troth, I do now remember the poor creature, small beer. But, indeed, these humble considerations make me out of love with my greatness. What disgrace is it to me to remember thy name, or to know thy face tomorrow, or to take note of how many pair of silk stockings thou hast, bees, these, and those that were the peach-colored ones, or to bear the inventory of thy shirts as one for superfluity, and another for use. But that the tennis court keeper knows better than I, for it has a low ebb of linen with thee when thou keepest not racket there, as thou hast not done in a great while, because the rest of thy low countries have made a shift to eat up thy Holland. And God knows whether those that ball up the ruins of thy linen shall inherit his kingdom. But the midwives say the children are not in the fault, whereupon the world increases, and kindreds are mightily strengthened.
How ill it follows. After you have labored so hard, you should talk so idly. Tell me, how many good young princes would do so, their fathers being so sick as yours at this time is?
Shall I tell thee one thing, Poins?
Yes, faith, and let it be an excellent good thing.
It shall serve among wits of no higher breeding than thine.
Go to. I stand the push of your one thing you will tell me.
Barry, I tell thee, it is not meet that I should be sad now. My father is sick. Albeit I could tell thee, as to one it pleases me for fault but better to call my friend. I could be sad. And sad indeed too.
Very hardly upon such a subject.
By this hand thou thinkest me as far in the devil's book as thou and Falstaff for obduracy and persistency. Let the end try the man. But I tell thee, my heart bleeds inwardly, that my father is so sick, and keeping such vile company as thou art hath, and reckon taken me all ostentation of sorrow.
The reason.
What wouldst thou think of me, if I should weep?
I would think thee a most princely hypocrite.
Ha! It would be every man's thought, and thou art a blessed fellow to think that every man thinks. Never a man's thought in the world keeps the rogue way better than thine. Every man would think me a hypocrite indeed. And what ascites your most worshipful thought to think so?
Why, because you have been so lewd and so much engrafted to Falstaff.
And to be?
By this light, I am well spoken. I can hear and hear with my own ears. The worst they can say of me is that I am a second brother, and that I am a proper fellow of my hands. And those two things, I confess, I cannot help. What a mess. Here comes Bartles.
And the boy that I gave Falstaff and Adam from me Christian. And look, if the fat villain hath not transformed him, eh?
God save your grace.
And yours, most noble Bardolph.
Come, you virtuous ass, you bashful fool. Must you be blushing? Wherefore blush you now? What a maidenly man-at-arms are you become? Is it such a matter to get a pottle pot's maidenhead?
A calls me in now, my lord, through a red lattice, and I could discern no part of his face from the window. At last I spied his eyes, and methought he had made two holes in the alewife's new petticoat, and so peeped through.
That's not the boy profited.
Away, you horse and upright rabbit, away!
Away, you rascally Alfia's dream, away!
Instruct us, boy. What dream, boy?
Marry, my lord, Alfia dreamed she was delivered of Firebrand, and therefore I call him her dream.
A crown's worth of good interpretation, too. There it is, boy.
Oh, that this good blossom could be kept from cankers. Well, there is sixpence to preserve thee.
And you do not make him hanged among you, the gallows shall have wrong.
And how doth thy master, Bardolph?
Well, my lord, he heard of your grace's coming to town. There's a letter for you.
Delivered with good respect. And how doth the mortal mess your master?
In bodily health, sir.
Marry, the immortal part of him needs a physician. But that moves him not. Though he be sick, it dies not.
I do allow this wind to be as familiar with me as my dog. And he holds his place, for look you how he writes.
John Falstaff, knight. Every man must know that. As oft as he has occasion to name himself. Even like those that are kin to the king. For they never prick their fingers, but they say, there's some of the king's blood spilled. How comes that, says he that takes upon him not to conceive? The answer is, as ready as a borrower's cap. I am the king's poor cousin, sir.
Nay, and will be kin to us, or they will fetch it from Japheth. But to the letter.
Sir John Falstaff, knight, to the son of the king, nearest his father, Harry Prince of Wales, greeting. This is the certificate.
Ah, kings.
I will imitate the honorable Romans in brevity. He sure means brevity and breath, short-winded. I commend thee, and I leave thee. Be not too familiar with coins, for he misuses thy favors so much that he swears thou art to marry his sister Nell. Repent at idle times as thou mayest, and so farewell. Thine by yea and no, which is as much as to say as thou usest him, Jack Falstaff, with my familiars, John, with my brothers and sisters, and Sir John, with all of Europe. My lord, I'll steep this letter in sack and make him eat it.
That's to make him eat 20 of his words, but... You use me thus, Ned. Must I marry your sister?
May God send the wench no worse fortune. But I never said so.
Well, thus we play fools with the time. And the spirits of the wise sit in the clouds and mock us. Is your master here in London?
Yea, my lord.
Where sups he? Doth the old boar feed in the old frank?
At the old place, my lord, in East Cheap.
What company?
Ephesians, my lord, of the old church.
Sup any women with him?
None, my lord, but old Mistress Quickly and Mistress Doll Tearsheet.
What pagan may that be?
A proper gentlewoman, sir, and a kinswoman of my master's.
Even such kin as parish heifers are to the town. But we shall steal upon them, Ned, at supper.
I am your shadow, my lord. I follow you.
Sirrah, you, boy, and Bardo. No word to your master that I am yet to come to town. There's for your silence.
I have no tongue, sir.
And for mine, sir, I will govern it.
Fare you well. Go. This dull tear sheet should be some road.
I warrant you, as common as the way between St. Albans and London.
How might we see Falstaff bestow himself tonight in his true colors, and not ourselves be seen?
Put on 2 leather jerkins and aprons, and wait upon him at his table as drawers.
From a god to a bull? A heavy dissension. It was Job's case. From a prince to a prentice. A low transformation, that shall be mine. For in everything the purpose must weigh with the folly. Follow me, Ned.
Scene 3, Warkworth, before the castle. Enter Northumberland, Lady Northumberland, and Lady Percy.
I pray thee, loving wife and gentle daughter, give even way unto my rough affairs. Put not on you the visage of the times, and be like to them, be like them to Percy Troublesome.
I have given over, I will speak no more. Do what you will, your wisdom be your guide.
Alas, sweet wife, my honor is at pawn, and but my going, nothing can redeem it.
Oh, yet, for God's sake, do not go to these wars. The time was, Father, that you broke your word, when you were more endeared to it than now. When your own Percy, when my heart's dear Harry, through many a northward look to see his father break up his powers, but he did long in vain. Today might I, hanging upon Hotspur's neck, have talked of Monmouth's grave.
Shrew your heart, fair daughter. You do draw my spirits from me with new lamenting ancient oversights. But I must go and meet with danger there, or it will seek me in another place and find me worse provided.
Oh, fly to Scotland, till that the nobles and the armed commons have their puissance made a little taste.
If they give ground advantage of the king, then join you with them like a rib of steel to make strength stronger. But for all our loves, first let them try themselves. So did your son. He was so suffered. So came I, a widow. And never shall have length of life enough to rain upon remembrance with mine eyes, that it may grow and sprout as high as heaven for reputation to my noble husband.
Come, come, go in with me. 'Tis with my mind as with the tide swelled up unto his height, that makes us stand still, running neither way. Fain would I go to meet the archbishop, but many thousand reasons hold me back. I will resolve for Scotland. There am I, till time and vantage crave my company.
Scene 4, London, the Boar's Head Tavern in Eastcheap. Enter Mistress Quickly and Doll Tearsheep.
The faith, sweetheart, methinks now you are in an excellent, good temporality. Your pulsage beats as extraordinarily as heart would desire. And your color, I warrant you, is as red as any rose in good truth, ma. But, faith, you have drunk too much canaries, and that's a marvelous searching wine, and it perfumes the blood ere one could say, what's this? How do you now?
Better than I was.
Well, that's well said. A good heart's worth of gold. Lo, here comes Sir John.
When Arthur first in court, after the Jordan, and was a worthy king.
How now, Mistress Doll?
Sick of a calm, yea, good faith.
So is all her sect, and they be once in a calm, they are sick.
You muddy rascal, is that all the comfort you give me?
You make fat rascals, Mistress Doll.
I make them. Gluttony and diseases make them. I make them not.
If the cook helped to make the gluttony, you helped to make the diseases, Doll. We catch of you, Doll. We catch of you. Grant that, my poor virtue grants that.
Yea, joy our chains and our jewels.
Your brooches, pearls, and ooches. For to serve bravely is to come halting off, you know. To come off the breach with his pike bend bravely, and to surgery bravely. To venture upon the charged chambers bravely.
Hang yourself, you muddy conger! Hang yourself!
By my troth, this is the old fashion. You two never meet but you fall to some discord. You are both in good truth as rheumatic as two dry toasts. You cannot bear with one another's confirmities. What the good year one must bear, and that must be you. You are the weaker vessel, as they say, the emptier vessel.
Can a weak, empty vessel bear such a huge, full hogshead? There's a whole merchant's venture of Bordeaux stuff in him. You have not seen a hulk better stuffed in the hold. Come, I'll be friends with thee, Jack. Thou art going to the wars, and whether I shall see thee again or no, there is nobody cares.
Sir, ancient pistols of the lowland would speak with you.
Hang him, swaggering rascal. Let him not come hither. It is the foul-mouthedest rogue in England.
If he swagger, let him not come here. No, by my faith, I must live among my neighbors. Oh, no swaggerers. I am in good name and fame with the very best. Shut the door. There comes no swaggerers here. I have not lived all this while to have swaggering now. Shut the door, I pray you.
Dost thou hear, hostess?
Pray, pacify yourself, Sir John. There come no swaggerers here.
Dost thou hear? It is mine ancient.
Tilly Fowler, Sir John, ne'er tell me. Your ancient swaggerers come not in my door. before Master Tissick, the deputy, the other day, and he said to me, 'Twas no longer ago than Wednesday last. A faithful neighbor quickly says he, Master Dumb, our neighbor, our minister was by then. Neighbor quickly says he, receive those that are civil. For, said he, you are in an ill name. Now, said so, I can tell whereupon. For, says he, you are an honest woman and well thought of. Therefore, take heed what guest you receive. Receive, says he, no swaggering companions. There, none calls here. You would bless you to hear what he said. No, oh, no swaggerers.
He's no swaggerer, hostess. A tame cheater, if fate. You may stroke him as gently as a puppy greyhound. He'll not swagger with a Barbary hen if her feathers turn back at any show of resistance.
Cheater, call me him. I will bear no honest man my house, nor no cheater. But I do not love swaggering by my troth. I am the worst when one says swaggerer. Feel, masters, how I shake. Look you, I warrant you.
So you do, hostess.
Do I? Yea, in very truth do I. As for an aspen leaf, I cannot abide swaggerers.
God save you, Sir John.
Welcome, ancient pistol. Here, pistol, I charge you with a cup of sack. Do you discharge upon my hostess?
I will discharge upon her, Sir John, with two bullets.
She is pistol-proof, sir. You shall hardly offend her.
Come, I'll bring no proofs nor no bullets. I'll bring no more than will do me good, for no man's pleasure, I.
Then to you, Mistress Dorothy, I will charge you.
Charge me? I scorn you, scurvy companion. What, you poor, base, rascally, cheating lackland and mate? Away, you moldy rogue, away! I am meat for your master.
I know you, Mistress Dorothy.
Away, you cut-purse rascal, you filthy bung, away! By this wine, I'll thrust my knife in your moldy chaps, and you play the saucy cuddle with me. Away, you bottle-ale rascal, you basket-hilt stale juggler, you! Since when, I pray you, sir, God's light with two points on your shoulder much.
God, let me not live, but I will murder your rough for this.
No more, pistol. I would not have you go off here.
No, good Captain Pistol, not here, sweet Captain.
Captain? Thou abominable damned cheater, art thou not ashamed to be called Captain? And captains were of my mind. They would truncheon you out for taking their names upon you before you have earned them. You, captain, you slave, for what? For tearing a poor whore's ruff in a bawdy house? He, a captain? Hang him, rogue. He lives upon moldy stewed prunes and dried cakes. A captain? God's light, these villains will make the world as odious as the word occupy, which was an excellent good word before it was ill-sorted. Therefore, captains had... need looked.
Pray thee, go down, good ancient.
Hark thee hither, Mistress Dahl.
No, I tell thee what, Corporal Bardolph. I could tear her. I'll be revenged of her.
Pray thee, go down.
I'll see her down first, the Pluto's damned leg by this hand, to the infernal deep with Erebus and tortures vile also. Hold, hold, and line, say I. Down, down, dog, down, faithless. Have we not iron here?
Good Captain, peaceably. Tis very late. Your faith, I beseech you now, aggravate your power.
These be good gentlemen, you is indeed. Shall pack horses and hollow pepper James of Asia, which cannot for 30 miles a day conquer with Caesars, and with cannibals, and Trojan Greeks? Nay, rather damn them to king's service, and let the welkin roar. Shall we call foul for toys?
By my troth, Captain, these are very bitter words.
Be gone, good ancient. This will grow to a brawl anon.
Die, men like dogs. Give crowns like pins. Have we not here and here?
Oh, my word, Captain, there's none such here. What the good year do you think I would deny her? For God's sake, be quiet.
And feed and be fat, my fair Calipolis. Come, give some sack. Si fortune me tormente, spirato me contento. Fear we wrong sides? No. Let the fiend give fire. Give me some sack, and sweetheart, lie down there. Come we to full points here, and our et cetera is nothing?
Pistol, I would be quiet.
Sweetheart, I kiss upon me. What? We have seen the seven stars.
For God's sake, thrust him down the stairs. I cannot endure such a Fustian rascal.
Truss him downstairs. No, we not Galloway nags.
Quite him down, Bardolph, like a shug-groat shilling. Nay, and do nothing but speak nothing, and shall be nothing here.
Come, get you downstairs.
What shall we be, incision? Shall we imbrue? Then death rock me asleep. Abridge my doleful days. Why then let grievous, ghastly, gaping wounds untwine the sisters three? Come, Atropos, I say.
Here's goodly stuff, Tor.
Give me my rapier, boy.
I pray thee, Jack, I pray thee, do not draw.
Get you downstairs.
This is goodly tumbled out there, forced for a keeping house, before I'll be in these timids and frights. So murder I warrant you now, Castlewise, put up your naked weapons. Put up your naked weapons.
I pray thee, Jack, be quiet. The rascal's gone. Ah, you whoreson little villain, you.
Are you not hurt in the groin? Methought a maid a shrewd thrust at your belly.
Have you turned him out of doors?
Yea, sir, the rascal's drunk. You have hurt him, sir, in the shoulder.
A rascal to brave me.
Ah, you sweet little rogue, you. Alas, poor ape, how sweetest. Thou, come, let me wipe thy face. Come on, you horse and chops. Ah, rogue, in faith I love thee. Thou art as valorous as Hector of Troy, worth 5 of Amagigamon, and 10 times better than the 9 worthies. Ah, villain.
A rascally slave. I will toss the rogue in a blanket.
Do, and thou dearest for thy heart, and thou dost all canvas thee between a pair of sheets. The music is come, sir.
Let them play. Play, sir. Sit on my knee, doll. A rascal bragging slave. The rogue fled from me like quicksilver.
If faith and thou followest him like a church, thou whoreson little tidy Bartholomew boar pig, when wilt thou leave fighting o' days and foining o' nights, and begin to patch up thine old body for heaven?
Enter behind Prince Henry in poins disguised. Peace, good doll. Do not speak like a death's head. Do not bid me remember mine end.
Sirrah, what humor's the prince of?
A good, shallow young fellow. I would have made a good cantler, and would have chipped bread well.
They say Poins has a good wit.
He a good wit? Hang him, baboon. His wit's as thick as Tewkesbury's mustard. There's no more conceit in him than is in a mallet.
Why does the prince love him so, then?
Because their legs are both of a bigness and a plays at quoits well, and eats conger and fennel, and drinks off candles' ends for flap dragons, and rides the wild mare with the boys, and jumps upon joined stools, and swears with a good grace, and wears his boots very smooth, like unto the sign of the leg, and breeds no bait with telling of discreet stories, and such other gamble faculties as has that show a weak mind and an able body, for the which the prince admits him. For the prince himself is such another. The weight of a hair will turn the scales between their avoirdupois.
Not this knave of a wheel have his ears cut off.
Let's beat him before his whore.
I am old.
I love thee better than I love e'er a scurvy young boy of them all.
What stuff wilt have a kirtle of? I shall receive money of Thursday. Shalt have a cap tomorrow. A merry song, come, it grows late, will to bed. Thou'lt forget me when I am gone.
By my troth, thou'lt set me a-weeping, and thou sayest so. Prove that ever I dress myself handsome till thy return. Well, hearken at the end.
So sack, Francis.
Anon, sir.
Ah! A bastard son of the king's, and art thou now Poins his brother?
Why, thou globe of sinful continents! What a life thou dost lead!
Better than thou, I am a gentleman. Thou art a drawer.
Very true, sir, and I come to draw you out by the ears.
Oh, the Lord preserve thy good grace, by my troth. Welcome to London. Now the Lord bless that sweet face of thine. Oh, yea, so are you come from Wales?
Valhor?
For once.
Yeah. A rascal. No. There I am.
17.
Thou whore son mad, compound of majesty, by this light flesh and corrupt blood, thou art welcome.
How, you fat that, fool! I scorn you!
My lord, he will drive you out of your revenge and turn all to a merriment, if you take not the heat.
You horse and candle mine, you! How vilely did you speak of me, even now, before this honest, virtuous, civil, gentlewoman!
God's blessing of your good heart, and so she is, by crow.
Did thou hear me?
Yeah. And you knew me, as you did when you ran away by Dad's Hill. You knew I was at your back, and you spoke it on purpose to try my patience.
No, 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 not so. I did not think thou wast within hearing.
I shall drive you then to confess the willful abuse, and then I know how to handle you.
No abuse, Hal. Oh, mine honor, no abuse.
Not to dispraise me. And call me Pantier and Bread Chipper, and I know not what.
No abuse, Hal.
No abuse?
No abuse, Ned. The world, honest Ned, none. I dispraised him before the wicked, that the wicked might not fall in love with him, in which doing I have done the part of a careful friend and true subject, and thy father is to give me thanks for it. No abuse, Hal, none, Ned, none. No, faith, boys, none.
See now? With a pure fear, entire cowardice doth make thee wrong this virtuous, gentle woman close with us. Is she of the wicked? Is thine hostess here of the wicked? Or is thy boy of the wicked? Or honest Bardo, whose zeal burns in his nose, of the wicked?
Answer, thou dead elm, answer.
The fiend hath pricked down Bardolph irrecoverable, and his face is Lucifer's privy kitchen, where he doth nothing but roast malt worms. For the boy, there is a good angel about him, but the devil outbids him too.
For the women?
For one of them, she is in hell already, and burns poor souls. For the other, I owe her money, and whether she'd be damned for that, I do not know. No, I think thou art not. I think thou art quit for that. Mary, there is another indictment upon thee for suffering flesh to be eaten in thy house, contrary to the law, for the which I think thou wilt howl.
All victuallers do so. What's a joint of mutton or two in a whole Lent?
You, gentlewoman.
What says your grace?
His grace says that which his flesh rebels against.
Not so loudly at the door. Look to the door there, Francis.
Hello. How now? What news?
The king, your father, is at Westminster, and there are 20 weak and weary posts come from the north. And as I came along, I met and overtook a dozen captains, bareheaded, sweating, knocking at the taverns, and asking everyone for Sir John Falstaff.
Oh, heaven's points. I feel so much to blame. So idly to profane the precious time when temptation of commotion like the south born with black vapor doth begin to melt and drop upon our bare unarmed hands. Give me my sword and cloak. Falstaff, good night.
Farewell, farewell.
Well, fare thee well. I have known thee these 29 years, come peacecock time. But an honester and truer-hearted man. Well, fare thee well.
Mistress Tershey!
What's the matter?
Good Mistress Tershey, come to my master.
Oh, run, doll, run, run, good doll, come. Yea, will you come, doll?
Act 3, Scene 1, Westminster, the palace. Enter King Henry IV in his nightgown with a page.
Go call the earls of Surrey and of Warwick. But ere they come, bid them all read these letters and well consider of them. Make good speed. How many thousand of my poorest subjects are at this hour asleep? Oh, sleep. Oh, gentle sleep. Nature's soft nurse. How have I frighted thee? That thou no more wilt weigh my eyelids down and steep my senses in forgetfulness. Why, rather, sleep, liest thou in smoky cribs, upon uneasy pallets, stretching thee in hushed with buzzing night flies to thy slumber, then in the perfumed chambers of the great, under the canopies of costly state, and lulled with sound of sweetest melody. O thou dull god, why liest thou with the vile in loathsome beds, and leavest the kingly couch a watch case or a common larum bell? Wilt thou upon the high and giddy mast seal up the shipboy's eyes and rock his brains in cradle of the rude imperious surge and in the visitation of the winds, who take the ruffian billows by the top, curling their monstrous heads and hanging them with deafening clamor in the slippering clouds that with the hurly death itself awaits? Canst thou, O partial sleep, give thy repose to the wet sea boy in an hour so rude, and in the calmest and most stillest night, with all appliances and means to boot, deny it to a king? Then happy low lie down. Uneasy lies the head that wears a crown.
Many good morrows to your majesty.
Is it morrow, good lords?
'Tis 1 o'clock and past.
Why then, good morrow to you all, my lords. Have you read over the letters that I sent you?
We have, my liege.
Then you perceive the body of our kingdom, how foul it is, what rank diseases grow, and with what danger near the heart of it.
It is but as a body yet distempered, which to his former strength may be restored with good advice and little medicine. My lord Northumberland will soon be cooled.
Oh, God, that one might read the book of fate and see the revolution of the times make mountains level, and a continent, weary of solid firmness, melt itself into the sea. And other times, to see the beachy girdle of the ocean, too wide for Neptune's hips, how chances mock and changes fill the cup of alteration with diverse liquors. Oh, if this were seen, the happiest youth, viewing his progress through, what perils past, what crosses to ensue, would shut the book and sit him down and die. 'Tis not 10 years gone since Richard and Northumberland, great friends, did feast together, and in 2 years after were they at wars. It is but 8 years since this Percy was the man nearest my soul, who like a brother toiled in my affairs and laid his love and life under my foot, yea, for my sake, even to the eyes of Richard, gave him defiance. But which of you was by? You, cousin Neville, as I may remember, when Richard, with his eye brimful of tears, then checked and raided by Northumberland, did speak these words, now proved a prophecy. Northumberland, thou ladder by the which my cousin Bolingbroke ascends my throne, though then, God knows, I had no such intent, but that necessity so bowed the state that I and greatness were compelled to kiss. That time shall come, thus did he follow it, the time will come that foul sin, gathering head, shall break into corruption. So went on, foretelling this same time's condition and the division of our amity.
There is a history in all men's lives, figuring in the nature of the times deceased, the which observed a man may prophesy, with a near aim, of the main chance of things as yet not come to life, which in their seeds and weak beginnings lie in treasure. Such things become the hatch and brood of time, and by the necessary form of this, King Richard might create a perfect guess that great Northumberland, then false to him, would of that seed grow to a greater falseness, which should not find a ground to root upon, unless on you.
Are these things then necessities? Then let us meet them like necessities. And that same word even now cries out on us. They say the bishop in Northumberland are 50,000 strong.
It cannot be, my lord. Rumor doth double, like the voice and echo the numbers of the feared. Please it your grace to go to bed. Upon my soul, my lord, the powers that you already have sent forth shall bring this prize in very easily. To comfort you the more, I received a certain instance that Glendower is dead. Your majesty hath been this fortnight ill, and these unseasoned hours perforce must add unto your sickness.
I will take your counsel. And were these inward wars once out of hand, we would, dear lords, unto the Holy Land.
Scene 2, Gloucestershire, before Shallow's house. Enter Shallow and Silence meeting, Moldy, Shadow, Wart, Feeble, Full Calf, a servant or two.
Come on, sir. Give me your hand, sir, an early stir by the room. And how doth my good cousin Silence?
Good morrow, good cousin Shallow.
And how doth my cousin, your bedfellow, and your fairest daughter and mine, my goddaughter Ellen?
Alas, and act black also, cousin Shallow.
And yea and nay, sir, I dare say my cousin William is become a good scholar. He is at Oxford still, is he not?
Indeed, sir, to my cost.
I must, then, to the inns of court shortly. I was once at Clement's Inn, where I think they will talk of Mad Shallow yet.
You were called Lusty Shallow then, cousin.
By the mass, I was called anything. And I would have done anything indeed, too, and roundly, too. There was I, and little John Doyle to Staffordshire, and Black George Barnes, and Francis Pickbone, and Will Squeal, a Cotswold man. You cannot four such swinge bucklers in all the inns of court again. And I may say to you, we knew where the Bonarobas were, and had the best of them all at commandment. Then was Jack Falstaff, now Sir John, a boy and page to Thomas Mowbray, Duke of Norfolk.
This Sir John, cousin, that comes hither and on about soldiers?
The same Sir John, the very same. I see him break Scogan's head at the court gate when it was a crack not thus high. And the very same day I did fight with one Samson Stockfish, a fruiterer behind Gray's Inn. Jesu, the mad days that I have spent, and to see how many of my old acquaintance are dead.
We shall all follow, cousin. Here comes two of Sir John Falstaff's men, as I think.
Good morrow, honest gentlemen. I beseech you, which is Justice Shallow?
I am Robert Shallow, sir, a poor esquire of this country, and one of the king's justices of the peace. What is your good pleasure with me?
My captain, sir, commends him to you. My captain, Sir John Falstaff, a tall gentleman by heaven, and a most gallant leader.
He greets me well, sir. I knew him a good backsword man. How doth the good knight? May I ask how my lady his wife doth?
Sir, pardon. A soldier is better accommodated than with a wife.
It is well said in faith, sir. And it is well said indeed, too. Better accommodated. It is good. Yea, indeed it is. Good phrases are surely and ever were very commendable. Accommodated. It comes of accommodo. Very good. A good phrase.
Pardon me, sir, I have heard the word. Phrase call you it, by this good day I know not the phrase, but I will maintain the word with my sword to be a soldier-like word, and a word of exceeding good command by heaven. Accommodated, that is, when a man is, as they say, accommodated, or when a man is being, whereby I may be thought to be accommodated, which is an excellent thing.
It is very just. Look, here comes good Sir John.
Yay.
Give me your good hand. By my troth, you like well and bear your years very well. Welcome, good Sir John.
I am glad to see you well, good Master Robert Shallow. Master Shortcard, as I think.
No, Sir John. It is my cousin Silence in commission with me.
Good Master Silence, it well befits you should be of the peace.
Your good worship is welcome.
Fie, this is hot weather, gentlemen. Have you provided me here a half a dozen sufficient men?
Marry, have we, sir. Will you sit?
Let me see them, I beseech you.
Where's the bowl? Where's the bowl? Where's the bowl? Let me see. So, yea, marry, sir. Ralph Moldy, let them appear as I call. Let them do so. Let me see, where's Moldy?
Here, and it please you.
What think you, Sir John? A good-limbed fellow, young, strong, and of good friends.
Is thy name Moldy?
Yea, and it please you.
Tis the more thou wert used.
Most excellent faith. Things that are moldy lack use. A very singular good change. Well said, Sir John. Very well said.
Prick him.
I was pricked well enough before, and you could have let me alone. My old dame will be undone now for one to do her husbandry and her drudgery. You need not to have pricked me. There are other men fitter to go out than I am.
Go to. Peace, Moldy. You shall go. Moldy, it is time you were spent.
Spent?
Peace, fellow, peace. Stand aside. Know where you are. For the other, Sir John, let me see. Silent Shadow?
Yea, marry, let me have him to sit under. He's like to be a cold soldier.
Where's Shadow?
Here, sir.
Shadow, whose son art thou?
My mother's son, sir.
Thy mother's son, like enough, and thy father's shadow. So the son of the female is the shadow of the male. It is often so indeed, but much of the father's substance.
Do you like him, Sir John?
Shadow will serve for summer. Prick him, for we have a number of shadows to fill up the muster book.
Thomas Wart.
Where's he?
Here, sir.
Is thy name Wart?
Yea, sir.
Thou art a very ragged wart.
Shall I prick him down, Sir John?
It were superfluous, for his apparel is built upon his back, and the whole frame stands upon pins. Prick him no more.
You can do it, sir. You can do it. I commend you well. Francis Feeble.
Here, sir.
What trade art thou, Feeble?
A woman's tailor, sir.
Shall I prick him, sir?
You may, but if he had been a man's tailor, he'd have pricked you. Wilt thou make as many holes in an enemy's battle as thou hast done in a woman's petticoat?
I will do my good will, sir. You can have no more.
Well said, good woman's tailor. Well said, courageous Feeble. Thou wilt be as valiant as the wrathful dove or most magnanimous mouse. Prick the woman's tailor. Well, Master Shallow, deep Master Shallow.
I would Wart might have gone, sir.
I would thou wert a man's tailor, that thou mightst mend him and make him fit to go. I cannot put him to a private soldier that is the leader of so many thousands. Let that suffice, most forcible Feeble.
It shall suffice, sir.
I am bound to thee, Reverend Feeble. Who is next?
Peter Bullcalf of Green.
Yea, marry, let's see, Bullcalf.
Here, sir.
For God, a likely fellow. Come, prick me, Bullcalf, till he roar again.
Oh, Lord, good my lord captain.
What dost thou roar before thou art pricked?
Oh, Lord, sir. I am a diseased man.
Oh, what disease hast thou?
Horse and cold, sir. Cough, sir, which I come with bringing in the king's affairs upon his coronation day, sir.
Come, thou shalt go to the wars in a gown. We will have away thy cold, and I will take such order that my friend shall ring for thee. Is here all?
Here is two more called than your number. You must have but four here, sir. And so I pray you, go in with me to dinner.
Come, I will go drink with you, but I cannot tarry dinner. I am glad to see you by my troth, Master Shallow.
Oh, Sir John, do you remember Century Day all night in the windmill in St. George's Field?
No more of that, good Master Shallow, no more of that.
Ah, it was a merry night, and is Jane Nutwork alive?
She lives, Master Shallow.
She could never away with me.
Never, never. She would always say she could not abide, Master Shallow.
By the mass, I could anchor her to the heart. She was then at Aurora. Does she hold her own well?
Old, old, Master Shallow.
Nay, she must be old. She cannot choose but be old. A surgeon, she's old. And had Robin Nightwork by old Nightwork before I came to Clement's Inn.
That's 55 years ago.
Cousin Silence, that thou hast seen that this knight and I have seen. Sir John, said I well.
We have heard the chimes at midnight, Master Shallow.
That we have. In faith, Sir John, we have. Our watchword was hem, boys. Come, let's to dinner. Come, let's to dinner. Jesus, the days we have seen. Come.
Act 4, Scene 1, Yorkshire, Galtree Forest. Enter the Archbishop of York, Mowbray, Lord Hastings, and others.
What is this forest called?
It's Galtree Forest, and please, Your Grace.
Here stand, my lords, and send discoverers forth to know the number of our enemies.
We have sent forth already.
'Tis well done. My friends and brethren in these great affairs, I must acquaint you that I have received new dated letters from Northumberland. Their cold intent, tender in substance, thus. Here doth he wish his person with such powers as might hold sortance with his quality, the which he could not levy. Whereupon he is retired to ripe his growing fortunes to Scotland, and concludes in hearty prayers that your attempts may overlive the hazard and fearful melting of their opposite.
Thus do the hopes we have in him touch ground and dash themselves to pieces.
Now, what news?
West of this forest, scarcely half a mile, in goodly form comes on the enemy. And by the ground they hide, I judge their number upon or near the rate of 30,000.
The just proportion that we gave them out. Let us sway on and face them in the field.
What well-appointed leader fronts us here?
I think it is my lord of Westmoreland.
Health and fair greeting from our general, the prince, Lord John, and Duke of Lancaster.
Say on, my lord of Westmoreland, in peace. What doth concern your coming?
Wherefore do you so ill translate yourself out of the speech of peace that bears such grace into the harsh and boisterous tongue of war, turning your books to graves, your ink to blood, your pens to lances, and your tongue divine to a trumpet and a point of war?
Wherefore do I this? So the question stands. Briefly to this end, we are all diseased, and with our surfeiting and wanton hours have brought ourselves into a burning fever, and we must bleed for it. Which disease our late King Richard being infected died. But, my most noble lord of Westmoreland, I take not on me here as a physician, nor do I as an enemy to peace troop in the throngs of military men, but rather show a while like fearful war to diet rank minds sick of happiness and purge the obstructions which begin to stop our very veins of life. Hear me more plainly. The dangers of the days but newly gone, whose memory is written on the earth with yet appearing blood, and the examples of every minute's instant present now, hath put us in these ill-beseeming arms, not to break peace or any branch of it, but to establish here a peace indeed, concurring both in name and quality.
When ever yet was your appeal denied? Wherein have you been galled by the king? What peer hath been suborned to grate on you, that you should seal this lawless bloody book of forged rebellion with a seal divine, and consecrate commotion's bitter edge?
My brother general, the Commonwealth, to brother boy and household cruelty, I make my quarrel in particular.
There is no need of any such redress, for if there were, it not belongs to you.
Why not to him in part? And to us all that feel the bruises of the days before, and suffer the conditions of these times, to lay a heavy and unequal hand upon our honors.
Oh, my good Lord Mowbray, construe the times to their necessities, and you shall say, indeed, it is the time, and not the king that doth you injuries. And yet for your part, it not appears to me either from the king or in the present time that you should have an inch of ground to build a grief on. Were you not restored to all the Duke of Norfolk's seigneuries, your noble and right well, your noble and right well-remembered fathers?
What thing in honor had my father lost that needed to be revived and breathed in me? The king that loved him, as the state stood then, was forced perforce compelled to banish him. And then that Harry Bolingbroke and he, being mounted and both roused in their seats, their neighing coursers dance daring of the spur, their armed staves in charge, their beavers down, their eyes of fire sparking through sights of steel, and the loud trumpet blowing them together. Then, when there was nothing could have saved my father from the breast of Bolingbroke, oh, when the king did throw his warder down, his own life hung upon the staff he threw. Then threw he himself down, and all their lives that by indictment and by dint of sword have since miscarried under Bolingbroke.
Mowbray, you overween to take it so. This offer comes from mercy, not from fear. For lo, within a ken our army lies, upon mine honor, all too confident to give admittance to a thought of fear. Our battle is more full of names than yours. Our men more perfect in the use of arms. Our armor all is strong, our cause the best. Then reason will our hearts should be as good. Say you not, then, our offer is compelled.
By my will, we shall admit no parley.
That argues but the shame of your offense. A rotten case abides no handling.
Hath the Prince John a full commission, in very ample virtue of his father, here, absolutely determined of what conditions we shall stand upon?
That is intended in the general's name. I muse you make so slight a question.
Then take, my lord of Westmoreland, the schedule. For this contains our general grievances, each several article here redressed, all members of our cause, both here and hence, that are insinued to this action, acquitted by a true substantial form and present execution of our wills to us and to our lawful purposes confined, we come within our awful banks again and knit our powers to the arm of peace.
This will I show the general. Please you, lords, inside of both our battles we may meet, and either end in peace, which God so frame,
or to the place of difference, call the swords which must decide it.
Our lords, we will do so.
Scene 2, another part of the forest. Enter from one side, Mowbray attended, afterwards the Archbishop of York, Hastings, and others. From the other side, Prince John of Lancaster and Westmoreland, officers and others with them.
You are well encountered here, my cousin Mowbray. Good day to you, gentle Lord Archbishop, and so to you, Lord Hastings, and to all.
Good, my Lord of Lancaster. I am not here against your father's peace. But as I told my Lord of Westmoreland, the time misordered doth in common sense crowd us and crush us to this monstrous form to hold our safety up. I sent your grace the parcels and particulars of our grief, the which hath been sown with scorn shoved from the court whereon this Hydra son of war is born, whose dangerous eyes may well be charmed to sleep with grant of our most just and right desires, and true obedience of this madness cured, stoop tamely to the foot of majesty.
If not, we ready are to try our fortunes to the last man.
And though we here fall down, we have supplies to second our attempt. If they miscarry, there shall second them. And so successive mischief shall be born, and heir from heir shall hold this war off, whilst England shall have generation.
Much too shallow, to sound the bottom of the aftertime.
Please, with your grace, to answer them directly. How far forth you do like their articles?
I like them all, and do them allow them well, and swear here, by honor of my blood, my father's purposes have been mistook, and some about him have too lavishly wrested his meaning and authority. My lord, these griefs shall be with speed redressed. Upon my soul they shall. If this may please you, discharge your powers unto their several countries, as we will ours, and here, between the armies, let's drink together friendly and embrace, that all their eyes may bear those tokens home of our restored love and amity.
I take your princely word for these redresses.
I give it to you, and will maintain my word, and thereupon I drink to your grace.
Go, Captain, and deliver to the army this news of peace. Let them have pay and part. I know it will well please them. Hide the captain.
To you, my noble lord of Westmoreland.
I pledge your grace. And if you knew what pains I have bestowed to breathe this present peace, you would drink freely. But my love to ye shall show itself more openly hereafter.
I do not doubt you.
I am glad of it. Health to my lord and gentle cousin Mowbray.
You wish me health and very happy season, for I am on the sudden something ill.
Against ill chances men are ever merry, but heaviness foreruns the good event.
Therefore be merry, cuz, since sudden sorrow serves to save us, some good thing comes tomorrow.
Believe me, I am passing light in spirit.
So much the worse if your own rule be true.
Yay!
What the hell?
The word of peace is rendered, hark, how they shout.
This had been cheerful after victory.
A peace is of the nature of a conquest. For then both parties nobly are subdued, and neither party loser.
Go, my lord, and let our army be discharged too. And good, my lord, so please you, let our trains march by us, that we may pursue the men we should have coped withal.
Go, good Lord Hastings, and ere they be dismissed, let them march by.
I trust, lords, we shall lie tonight together. Now, cousin, wherefore stands our army still?
The leaders, having charge from you to stand, will not go off until they hear you speak.
They know their duties.
My lord, our army is dispersed already. Like youthful steers unyoked, they take their courses east, west, north, south, or like a school broke up, each hurries toward his home and sporting place.
Good tidings, my lord Hastings. For the which I do arrest thee, traitor, for high treason. And you, Lord Archbishop, and you, Lord Mowbray, of capital treasons, I attach you both.
Is this proceeding just and honorable?
Is your assembly so?
Will you thus break your faith?
I pawned thee none. I promised you redress of these same grievances whereof you did complain, which, by mine honor, I will perform with a most Christian care. But for you, rebels, look to taste the dew, meet for rebellion, and such acts as yours, most shallowly did you these arms commence, fondly brought here and foolishly sentenced, Strike up your drums, pursue the scattered stray. God and not we have safely fought today. Some guard these traitors to the block of death. Treason's due bed and yielder up of breath.
Scene 3, another part of the forest. Alarum excursions enter Falstaff and Colville meeting. What's your name, sir? Of what condition are you and of what place, I pray?
I am a knight, sir, and my name is Colville of the Dale.
Well then, Colville is your name, a knight is your degree, and your place the Dale. Colville shall be still your name, a traitor your degree, and the dungeon your place, a place deep enough, so shall you still be Colville of the Dale.
Are you not Sir John Falstaff?
As good a man as he, sir, whoever I am. Do ye yield, sir, or shall I sweat for you? If I do sweat, there are the drops of thy lovers, and they weep for thy death. Therefore rouse up fear and trembling, and do observance to my mercy.
I think you are Sir John Falstaff, and in that thought yield me.
I have a whole school of tongues in this belly of mine, and not a tongue of them all speaks any other word but my name. And I had but a belly of any indifference. I were simply the most active fellow in Europe. My womb, my womb, my womb undoes me. Here comes our general.
The heat is past. Follow no further now. Call in the powers, good cousin Westmoreland. Now, Falstaff, where have you been all this while? When everything is ended, then you come. These tardy tricks of yours will, on my life, one time or another, break some gallows back.
I would be sorry, my lord, but it should be thus. I never knew ye, but rebuke and check was the reward of valor. Do you think me a swallow, an arrow, or a bullet? Have I, in my poor and old motion, the expedition of thought? I have speeded hither with the very extremest inch of possibility. I have foundered 90 and odd posts. And here, travel-tainted as I am, have in my pure and immaculate valor taken Sir John Colville of the Dale, a most furious knight and valorous enemy. But what of that? He saw me and yielded, that I may justly say with the hook-nosed fellow of Rome, I came, saw, and overcame.
It was more his courtesy than your deserving.
I know not. Here he is, and here I yield him. And I beseech your grace, let it be booked with the rest of the day's deeds, or by the Lord I will have it in a particular ballad else, with mine own picture on top of it, Colville kissing my foot.
Is thy name Colville?
It is, my lord.
A famous rebel art thou, Colville.
And a famous true subject took him.
I am, my lord, but as my betters are that led me hither, had they been ruled by me, you should have won them dearer than you have.
I know not how they sold themselves, but thou, like a kind fellow, gavest thyself away gratis, and I thank thee for thee.
Now, have you left pursuit?
Retreat is made and execution stayed.
Send Colville with his confederates to York to present execution. Blunt, lead them hence, and see you guard him sure. And now, dispatch me toward the court, my lords. I hear the king, my father, is sore sick. Our news shall go before us to his majesty, which cousin you shall bear to comfort him, and we with sober speed will follow you.
I would you have but the wit. 'Twere better than your dukedom. Good faith, this same young, sober-blooded boy doth not love me, nor a man cannot make him laugh. But that's no marvel, he drinks no wine. There's never none of these demure boys come to any proof, for thin drink doth so overcool their blood in making many fish meals that they fall into a kind of male green sickness. And then when they marry, they get wenches. They are generally fools and cowards, which some of us should be too, but for an inclination. If I had 1,000 sons, the first humane principle I would teach them should be to forswear thin potations and addicts themselves to sack. How now, Bardolph?
The army is discharged and all and gone.
Let them go. I'll go through Gloucestershire, and there I will meet Master Robert Shallow, Esquire. I have him already tempering between my finger and my thumb, and shortly I will seal with him. Come away. Scene 4, Westminster, the Jerusalem Chamber. Enter King Henry IV, the princes Thomas of Clarence and Humphrey of Gloucester, Warwick, and others.
Now, lords, if God doth give successful end to this debate that bleedeth at our doors, we will our youth lead on to higher fields and draw no swords but what are sanctified. Our navy is addressed, our power collected, our substitutes in absence well invested, and everything lies level to our wish. Only we want a little personal strength, and pause us till these rebels now afoot come underneath the yoke of government.
Both which we doubt not, but your majesty shall soon enjoy.
Humphrey, my son of Gloucester, where is the prince your brother?
I think he's gone to hunt my lord at Windsor.
And how accompanied?
I do not know, my lord.
Is not his brother, Thomas of Clarence, with him?
No, my good lord, he is in presence here.
What would my lord and father?
Nothing but well to thee, Thomas of Clarence. How chance thou art not with the prince, thy brother? He loves thee, and thou dost neglect him, Thomas. Thou hast a better place in his affection than all thy brothers. Cherish it, my boy, and noble offices thou mayst effect of mediation after I am dead, between his greatness and thy other brethren. Therefore omit him not, blunt not his love, nor lose the good advantage of his grace by seeming cold or careless of his will. For he is gracious if he be observed. He hath a tear for pity and a hand open as day for melting charity. Yet notwithstanding be incensed, he's flint, as humorous as winter, and as sudden as flaws congealed in the spring of day. His temper, therefore, must be well observed. Chide him for faults, and do it reverently, when thou perceive his blood inclined to mirth. But, being moody, give him line and scope, till that his passions, like a whale on ground, confound themselves with working. Learn this, Thomas, and thou shalt prove a shelter to thy friends, a hoop of gold to bind thy brothers in, that the united vessel of their blood, mingled with venom of suggestion, as force for force the age will pour it in, shall never leak, though it do work as strong as aconitum or rash gunpowder.
I shall observe him with all care and love.
Why art thou not at Windsor with him, Thomas?
He is not there today. He dines in London.
And how accompanied? Canst thou tell that?
With poems and other his continual followers.
Most subject is the fattest soil to weeds, and he, the noble image of my youth, is overspread with them. Therefore my grief stretches itself beyond the hour of death. The blood weeps from my heart when I do shape in forms imaginary the unguided days and rotten times that you shall look upon when I am sleeping with my ancestors. For when his headstrong riot hath no curb, when rage and hot blood are his counselors, when means and lavish manners meet together, oh, with what means shall his affections fly towards fronting peril and opposed decay?
My gracious lord, you look beyond him quite. The prince but studies his companions like a strange tongue, wherein, to gain the language, 'tis needful that the most immodest word be looked upon and learned. Which once attained, your highness knows, comes to no further use but to be known and hated. So like gross terms, the prince will, in the perfectness of time, cast off his followers, and their memory shall as a pattern or a measure live, by which his grace must meet the lives of others, turning past evils to advantages.
'Tis seldom when the bee doth leave her comb in the dead carrion. Who's here, Westmoreland?
Health to my sovereign, and new happiness, added to that I am to deliver. Prince John, your son, doth kiss your grace's hand. Mowbray, the Bishop Scroop, Hastings, and all are brought to the correction of your law. There is not now a rebel's sword unsheathed, but peace puts forth her olive everywhere. The manner how this action hath been borne, here at more leisure may your highness read with every course in his particular.
Oh, Westmoreland, thou art a summer bird, which ever in the haunch of winter sings the lifting up of day. Look, here's no more news.
From enemies heaven keep your majesty. And when they stand against you, may they fall as those that I am come to tell you of. The Earl Northumberland and Lord Bardolph, with the great power of English and Scots, are by the Sheriff of Yorkshire overthrown. The manner and true order of the fight, this packet, pleaseth you, contains at large.
And wherefore should these good news make me sick? Will fortune never come with both hands full, but write her fair words still in foulest letters? She gives either of stomach and no food, Such are the poor in health, or else a feast and takes away the stomach. Such are the rich that have abundance and enjoy it not. I should rejoice now at this happy news. And now my sight fails, and my brain is giddy. Oh, me, come near me now. I am much ill.
Comfort your majesty.
Oh, my royal father.
Sovereign lord, cheer up yourself. Look up.
Be patient, princes. You do know these fits are with his highness very ordinary. Stand for him. Give him air. He'll straight be well.
No, no, he cannot long hold out these pangs. The incessant care and labor of his mind hath wrought the view of it, should confine it in so thin that life looks through and will break out.
The people fear him, for they do observe unfathered heirs and loathly births of nature. The seasons change their manners as the year hath found some months asleep and leap the more.
The river hath thrice flowed, no ebb between, and as the old folk, time's doting chronicles, say it did so a little time before that our great grandsire Edward, sick to die.
Speak lower, princes, for the king recovers.
This apoplexy will certainly be his end.
I pray you, take me up and bear me hence into some other chamber. Softly, pray. Let there be no noise made, my gentle friends, unless some dull and favorable hand will whisper music to my weary spirit.
Call for the music in the other room.
Set me the crown upon my pillow here.
His eye is hollow and he changes much.
Less noise, less noise.
Who saw the Duke of Clarence?
I am here, brother, full of heaviness.
How now? Rain within doors and not abroad? How about the king?
Exceeding ill.
Are you new the news yet? Tell him.
He altered much upon the hearing of it.
If he be sick with joy, he'll recover without physic.
Not so much noise, my lords. Sweet prince, speak low. The king, your father, is disposed to sleep.
Let us withdraw into the other room.
Will it please your grace to go along with us?
No. I will sit and watch here by the king. Why doth his crown lie upon his pillow, being so troublesome bedfellow? Polish perturbation, golden care, that keepest the ports of slumber open wide to many a watchful night. Sleep with it now. Yet not so, and half so deeply sweet is he whose brow with holy big and bounce snores out of watch of night. Oh, majesty, when thou doth pinch thy bearer, thou dost sit like a rich armor worn in heat of day that scalds with safety. By his gates of breath there lies a downy feather, which stirs not. Did he suspire that light and weightless down perforce must move? My gracious lord, my father, this sleep is sound indeed. This is a sleep that from his golden wriggle hath divorced so many English kings. Thy due for me is tears and heavy sorrows of the blood which nature, love, and filial tenderness shall, my dear father, pay thee plenteously. My due from thee is this imperial crown which, as immediate as thy place and blood derives itself to me, lo, here it sits, which God shall guard and put the world's whole strength into one giant arm. It shall not force the lineal honor from me. This from thee will I to mine leave. This is left to me. Warwick, Gloucester, Clarence.
Doth the king call?
What would your majesty? How fares your grace?
Why did you leave me here alone, my lord?
We left the prince, my brother, here, my liege, who undertook to sit and watch by you.
The Prince of Wales? Where is he? Let me see him. He is not here.
This door is open. He has gone this way.
He came not through the chamber where we stay.
Where is the crown? Who took it from my pillow?
When we withdrew, my liege, we left it here.
The prince hath ta'en it hence. Go, seek him out. Is he so hasty that he doth suppose my sleep my death? Find him, my lord of Warwick. Chide him hither. This part of his conjoins with my disease and helps to end me. See, sons, what things you are. How quickly nature falls into revolt when gold becomes her object. For this the foolish, overcareful fathers have broke their sleep with thoughts, their brains with care, their bones with industry. For this they have engrossed and piled up the cankered heaps of strange achieved gold. For this they have been thoughtful to invest their sums with arts and martial exercises, when, like the bee, culling from every flower the virtuous sweets, our thighs packed with wax, our mouths with honey, we bring it to the hive and, like the bees, are murdered for our pains. This bitter taste yields his engrossments to the ending father. Now where is he that will not stay so long till his friend sickness hath determined me?
My lord, I found the prince in the next room, washing with kindly tears his gentle cheeks, with such a deep demeanor and great sorrow that tyranny, which never quaffed but blood, would, by beholding him, have washed his knife with gentle eye drops. He is coming hither.
But wherefore did he take the crown? Lo, where he comes. Come hither to me, Harry. Depart the chamber. Leave us here alone.
I thought never to hear you speak again.
Thy wish was father, Harry, to that thought. I stay by too long by thee. I weary thee. Dost thou so hunger for mine empty chair that thou wilt needs invest me with my honors before thy hour be ripe? O foolish youth, thou seekest the greatness that will overwhelm thee. Stay but a little, for my cloud of dignity is held from falling with so weak a wind that it will quickly drop. My day is dim. Thou hast stolen that which after some few hours were thine without offense. And at my death thou hast sealed up my expectation. Thy life did manifest thou lovest me not, and thou wilt have me die assured of it. Thou hidest 1,000 daggers in thy thoughts, which thou hast whetted on thy stony heart, to stab at 30 minutes of my life. What, canst thou not forbear me 30 minutes? Then get thee gone and dig my grave thyself, and bid the merry bells ring to thine ear that thou art crowned, not that I am dead.
Oh, pardon me, my liege. But for my tears, the moist impediments unto my speech, I had forestalled this dear and deep rebuke ere you with grief had spoke, and I had heard the course of it so far. This is your crown, and he that wears the crown immortally long guard it yours. And I affect it more than as your honor and as your renown, let me no more from this obedience rise with my most inward, true, and duteous spirit. There each, this prostrate and exterior bending. God witness with me! When I here came in and found no course of breath within your majesty, how cold it struck my heart. If I do feign, oh, let me in my present wildness die and never live to show the incredulous world the noble change that I have purposed. Coming to look on you, thinking you dead, and dead almost, my liege, to think you were, I spake unto this crown as having sense and thus upbraided it. The care on thee depending hath fed upon the body of my father. Therefore, thou best of gold art worst of gold. Other, less fine in carat, and most precious, preserving life and medicine potable, but thou, most fine, most honored, most renowned, hast ate that bearer up. Thus my most royal liege, accusing it, put it on my head, to try with it, as with an enemy that had before my face murdered my father, the quarrel of a true inheritor. But if it did infect my blood with joy, or swell my thoughts to any strain of pride, if any rebel or vain spirit of mine did with the least affection of a welcome give entertainment into the might of it, let God forever keep it from my head, and make as the poorest vassal is that doth with awe and terror kneel to it.
Oh, my son, God put it in thy mind to take it hence, that thou mightst win more of the father, that thou mightst win the more thy father's love, pleading so wisely in excuse of it. Come hither, Harry, sit thou by my bed, and hear, I think, the very latest counsel that ever I shall breathe. God knows, my son, by what bypaths and indirect, crooked ways I met this crown, and I myself know well how troublesome it sat upon my head. To thee it shall descend with bitter quiet, better opinion, better confirmation, for all the soil of the achievement goes with me into the earth. It seemed in me but as an honor snatched with boisterous hand, and I had many living to upbraid my gain of it by their assistances, which daily grew to quarrel and to bloodshed, wounding supposed peace. All these bold fears thou seest with peril I have answered, for all my reign hath been but as a scene acting that argument. And now my death changes the mode, for what in me was purchased falls upon thee in a more fairer sort. So thou the garland wear'st successively.
My gracious liege, you won it, wore it, kept it, gave it me. Then plain and right must my possession be, which I, with more than with a common pain, against all the world will rightfully maintain.
Look, look, here comes my John of Lancaster.
Health, peace, and happiness to my royal father.
Thou bringest me happiness and peace, son John. But health, alack, with youthful wings is flown from this fair withered trunk. Upon thy sight my worldly business makes a period. Where is my Lord of Warwick?
Prince, my Lord.
My Lord of Warwick!
Doth any name particular belong unto the lodging where I first did swoon?
'Tis called Jerusalem, my noble lord.
Laud be to God. Even there my life must end. It hath been prophesied to me many years I should not die but in Jerusalem, which vainly I suppose the Holy Land. But bear me to that chamber, there I'll lie. In that Jerusalem shall Harry die.
Act 5, Scene 1, Gloucestershire, Shallow's house. Enter Shallow, Falstaff, Bardolph, and Page.
By cock and pie, sir! You shall not away tonight.
There's more to that.
Where are you, Sir John?
Keep going with Bardolph. Okay, I am glad to see your worship. Oh, we got some pages missing.
Oh, my goodness.
That's okay.
I shall thank thee.
I thank thee with all my heart, kind Master Bardolph, and welcome, my tall fellow. Come, Sir John.
I'll follow you, good Master Robert Shallow. Scene 2, Westminster, the palace. Enter Warwick and the Lord Chief Justice.
How now, my Lord Chief Justice? Whither away?
How doth the king?
Exceeding well. His cares are now all ended.
I hope not dead.
He's walked the way of nature, and to our purposes he lives no more.
Would his majesty had called me with him. The service that I truly did his life hath left me open to all injury.
Indeed, I think the young king loves you not.
I know he doth not. Do arm myself to welcome the condition of the time, which cannot look more hideously upon me than I have drawn it in my fantasy.
Here comes the heavy issue of dead Harry. Oh, that the living Harry had the temper of him, the worst of these three gentlemen. How many nobles then should hold their places that must strike sail to spirits of vile sort?
Now, God, I fear all will be overturned.
Good morrow, Cousin Warwick. Good morrow.
Good morrow, Cousin.
Good morrow, Cousin.
We meet like men that have forgot to speak.
We do remember, but our argument is all too heavy to admit much talk.
Well, peace be with him that hath made us heavy.
Peace be with us, lest we be heavier.
Oh, good my lord, you have lost a friend indeed. And I dare swear you borrow not that face of seeming sorrow. It is sure your own.
Though no man be assured what grace to find, you stand in coldest expectation. I am the sorrier would twere otherwise.
Well, you must now speak, Sir John Falstaff, fair, which swims against your stream of quality. Sweet princes, what I did in honor, led by the impartial conduct of my soul. And never shall you see that I will beg a ragged and forestalled remission.
If truth and upright innocency failed me, I'll tell the king my master that is dead, and tell him who hath sent me after him.
Here comes the prince.
Good morrow, and God save your majesty.
This new and gorgeous garment, majesty, sits not as easily as you might think. Brothers, you mix your sadness with some fear. This is the English, not the Turkish court. Not the Amurath and Amurath succeeds, but Harry. Harry! That be sad, good brothers. For, by my faith, it very well becomes you. Sorrow so royally in you appears that I will deeply put the fashion on and wear it in my heart. Why then, be sad? But entertain no more of it, good brothers, than a joint burden laid upon us all. For me, by heaven, I bid you be assured I'll be your father and your brother, too. Let me but hear your love. I'll bear your cares. Yet weep that Harry's dead, and so will I. But Harry lives. That shall come convert those tears by number into hours of happiness. No prince nor peer shall have just cause to say, God shorten Harry's happy life one day.
Scene 3, Gloucestershire, Shallow's Orchard. Enter Shallow, Pistol, and Falstaff. How now, Pistol?
Sir John, God save you.
What wind blew you hither, Pistol?
Not the ill wind that blows no man to good. Sweet knight, thou art now one of the greatest men in this realm.
By her lady, I think it be but good man Puff of Barston.
What? Did we just jump?
We're all dead.
He's cutting the script.
Okay.
Shallow, give me
pardon. Give me pardon, sir. Yeah. If, sir, you come with news from the court, I take it there's but two ways, either to utter them or to conceal them. I am, sir, under the king in some authority.
Under which king? Massonian speak or die?
Under King Harry.
Harry the fourth or fifth?
Harry the fourth.
As soldier for thine office, Sir John, thy tender lamb king now is king. Harry the fifth's the man. I speak the truth. When this lies, do this and fig me like a bragging spaniard.
What? Is the old king dead?
As men endure, the kings I see are just.
Away, Barnall, saddle my horse. Master Robert Shallow, choose what office thou wilt in the land, 'tis thine. Pistol, I will double charge thee with dignities.
Oh, joyful day, I would not take a knighthood for my fortune.
What? Why do you bring good news?
Carry Master Silence to bed. Master Shallow, my... Lord Shallow, be what thou wilt. I am fortune's steward. Get on thy boots, we'll ride all night. Oh, sweet Pistol, away, Bardolph. Come, Pistol, utter more to me, and with all devise something to do thyself good. Boot, boot, Master Shallow. I know the young king is sick for me. Let us take any man's horses. The law of England are at my commandments. Blessed are they that have been my friends, and woe to my Lord Chief Justice.
That vultures by a siege on his lungs also. Where is the life that I led, so they say? Why, here it is. Welcome these peasant days.
Scene 4, London, the street. Enter Beatles dragging in hostess quickly and doll Tertiant.
No, thou errant knave, I would to God that I might die, that I might have thee hanged. That has thrown thy shoulder out of
the
jaw.
The constables have delivered her over to me, and she shall have whipping cheer enough. I warrant her there shall be, there hath been a man or two lately killed about her.
Nuthook, you lie. Come on, I'll tell thee what, you damned trick visage rascal. And the child I now go with do miscarry. Thou wert better thou hadst struck thy mother, thou paper-faced villain.
Oh, the Lord, that Sir John were come, he would make us a bloody day to somebody. But I pray to God the fruit of her womb miscarry.
If it do, you shall have a dozen of cushions again. And you have but 11 now. Come, I charge you both go with me, for the man is dead that you and Pistol beat amongst you.
I'll tell you what, you thin man and a censor. I will have you as soundly swing for this, you blue-bottled rogue, you filthy famished correctioner. If you not be swinged, I'll forswear half kirtles.
Come, come, you she-knight errant, come.
God that right should thus overcome might, well, will suffer it comes ease.
Come, you rogue, come, bring me to a justice.
I come, you starved bloodhound.
Good men death, good man bone.
Thou agony thou.
Come, you thin thing, come, you rascal.
Very well.
Scene 5, a public place near Westminster Abbey. Enter Falstaff, Shallow, Pistol, Bardolph, and Page. Stand here by me, Master Robert Shallow. I will make the king do your grace. I will leer upon him as come by, and do but mark the countenance that he will give me.
God bless thy lungs, good knight.
Come here, Pistol, stand behind me. Oh, if I had had time to have made new liveries, I would have bestowed the 1,000 pound I borrowed of you. But 'tis no matter, this poor show doth better. This doth infer the zeal I had to see him.
It doth so.
It shows my earnestness of affection.
It doth so.
My devotion.
It doth.
As it were to ride day and night, and not to deliberate, not to remember, not to have patience to shift
it
me.
It is best certain.
But to stand stained with travel and sweating with desire to see him, thinking of nothing else, putting all affairs else in oblivion, as if there were nothing else to be done but to see him.
Tis semper idem, for obstui hoc nihil est. Tis all in every part.
Tis so indeed.
My knight, I will inflame thy noble liver and make thee rage. My gall and Helen of thy noble thoughts is in base durance and contagious prison. Hail thither by most mechanical and dirty hand. Rouse up revenge from Ebon dead with fell Electo's snake, for doll is in, Pistol speaks not but truth.
I will deliver her.
There roar the sea and truck clangor sounds.
God save thy grace, King Hal, my royal Hal.
To heaven see God and keep most royal imp of fame.
God save thee, my sweet boy.
Have you your wits? Know you what is to speak?
My king, my Jove, I speak to thee, my heart!
I know thee not, old man. Fall to thy prayers. How ill white hairs become a fool and a jester. I have long dreamed of such a kind of man. So surface swelled, so old, so profane. But being awakened, I do despise my dream. Make less thy body hence, and more thy grace. Leave gormandizing. Though the grave doth gape for thee thrice wider than for other men. Reply not to me with a fool-born jest. Presume not that I am the thing I was, for God doth know, and so shall the world perceive that I have turned away from my former self. So will I lose that kept me company. So will I those that kept me company. Well, now thus here I am as I have been, approach me, and thou shalt be as thou wast, a tutor and the feeder to my rights. Till then, I banish thee, on pain of death, as I have done the rest of my misleaders, not to come near our person by 10 mile, for competence of life I will allow you. That lack of means enforce you not to evil, and as we hear you do reform yourselves, we will, according to your strengths and qualities, give you advancement. Be it your charge, my lord, to see perform the tenor of our word.
Sit down. Master Shallow, I owe you 1,000 pounds.
Yea, marry, Sir John, which I beseech you to let me have home with me.
That can hardly be, Master Shallow. Do not you grieve at this. I shall be sent for in private to him. Look, you, he must see thus to the world. Fear not your advancements. I will be the man, yet thou shalt make you great.
I cannot well perceive how, unless you should give me your doublet and stuff me up with straw. I beseech you, good Sir John, let me have 500 of my 1,000.
Sir, I will be as good as my word. This that you heard was but a color.
A color that I fear you will die in, Sir John.
Fear no colors. Go with me to dinner. Come, Lieutenant Pistol. Come, Bardolph. I shall be sent for soon at night.
Go carry Sir John Falstaff to the fleet. Take all his company along with him.
My lord! My lord!
Now speak. I will hear you soon. Take them away.
I like this fair proceeding of the king's. He has intent his wanton followers should all be well provided for, but all are banished till their conversations appear more wise and modest to the world.
And so they are.
The king hath called his parliament, my lord.
He hath?
I will lay at odds that, ere this year expire, we will bear our civil swords in native fire as far as France. I heard a bird so sing, whose music, to my thinking, pleased the king. Come, will you, hence?
Birds. Thank you very much to the cast for great forbearance in what turned out to be a much more complicated script than I thought of last year when bright idea of doing.
It's like Shakespeare almost.
Yeah. Those history plays.
See how it ends.
Any questions? A
sequel? Is there a sequel?
Thank you all for coming to the Shakespeare Beauty Walk.
And if you like your Shakespeare, next Friday night, Banff Theater, we're airing Still Dreaming, which is a documentary about Midsummer Night's Dream being performed at a retirement home.
That's right. And the director is speaking for free. Right before. The movie's at 7:30 at the BAM. It's also free.
Yeah.
And Hank Richardson is speaking at 6.
Yep.
Also free. He's the filmmaker, so he's going to tell us about...
At the BAM?
At the BAM. And he's speaking... Yeah. All of it's in the theater. So, And he's going to do a Q&A after, too. So it's going to be really awesome. Free open to public conference.
Same director who did Shakespeare Behind the Bars.
Yeah.
That.
No, Shakespeare Behind the Bars.
That's the next one.
Yes, right.